50,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 9th of March, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. Before we do, however, gather around your radio. I have a public service announcement. Please listen very carefully. Get off the roads. My daughter is 16 today.
You think you got gray hair now?
For God's sake, cower in your basements. Actually, she won't be able to get her permit, I think, until Wednesday. You know, she won't be able to get to the DMV until Wednesday.
Are you going to take her out and show her how to drive?
You kidding? Yes. No, Elaine will do it.
What? No, I will. No. No, my daughter is 16. While she and her mother love each other, they are a mother and 16-year-old daughter. Really, they shouldn't be allowed in the front seat together. No.
That bad?
Well, I mean, it's typical, you know?
Where are you going to take her to practice, though? Parking lot?
Parking lots? Start with.
Yeah.
Then my father-in-law lives in Leroy. We'll head out that way.
When she gets her license, what kind of car are you going to buy her?
Oh, see, this is the same question she's asking
me.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
I don't think so.
A Yugo.
I'll be taking up donations. See, years ago, a friend of mine said, you got to help me. She's a single mom. She said, you got to help me get my daughter a car. The daughter was my goddaughter, so I was more than happy to do it. We found the perfect car. It's a little red two-seater. In the driveway, it looked like it was going 150 miles an hour. The engine was so lousy, it couldn't get out of its own way. So it was really the perfect car for both of them. And I'm hoping to find something along those lines.
Sure. Get her a riding lawnmower to start. Put a license plate on it, horn, a couple turning signals.
Go-kart.
A big wheel, go-kart. I could see that driving around downtown.
Big wheel with a playing card in the spokes. I'm ready. All right. So stay off the roads. I think you're safe today. Pretty safe on Monday and Tuesday. But by Wednesday afternoon, really, really, buy a blimp. Have it delivered before Tuesday. All right. It seems that the ultra-portable ASUS EEEPC can do no wrong. The size of a paperback, weighing about 2 pounds with built-in Wi-Fi and using flash memory instead of a hard drive for storage, costing between $300 and $500, the EEEPC, or the EPC, I don't know how they pronounce that, has been winning positive comments. EPC. He's been winning positive comments not just from hyperventilating hardware reviewers, but also from ordinary people who actually bought it. Looking through the thousands of postings in EEEuser.com's user forums, the same comments keep coming up. It's so small, the build quality is high, boots up quickly, it just works. In fact, it's hard to find many negative points. The most negative points are about where they place the right-hand shift key, the small size of the keyboard, limited battery life, and the slightly awkward mouse pad. One thing that is almost never mentioned as a problem is the fact that the EEEPC is not running Windows, but a variant of Linux. Until now, common wisdom has been that Linux will never take off with general users because it's too complicated. One of the signal achievements of the ASUS EEPC is that it has come up with a front end that hides the richness of the underlying Linux, divides its programs up into a few basic categories, internet, work, learn, and play, and then provides large self-explanatory icons for the main programs in each group. The result is that anyone can use the system without training or even hand-holding. This combination of good functionality and out-of-the-box ease of use with a price so low that it's almost an impulse buy level could prove problematic for Microsoft. Because the form factor is so different, people don't seem to make a direct comparison with desktop PCs and therefore don't expect the user experience to be identical. The price differential between the basic EEEPC running Linux and one running Windows XP is now significant as a proportion of the total cost. If you wanted to run an EEEPC with Windows, you'd probably pay 30% or more above the base cost of the machine in order to get Windows on it. And in fact, you'll more than double the price of the machine if you buy Windows commercially, as opposed to buying it from ASUS with the machine. It is that difference far more than any cost of licensing Windows, which means that Linux-based machines can remain consistently cheaper. That disparity seems likely to increase when Microsoft phases out Windows XP at the end of June, because Vista costs more than Windows XP. And by the way, it requires a minimum of 15 gigabytes of storage for installation of even the most basic version. The UK company LNX has already set an even lower price point. It just announced its own ultra-portable called The One. Apparently, it looks like Jet Li, which offers most of the features of the EE PC for $200. Other companies have also launched or announced similar machines running Linux, including Acer, Everex, and Pioneer Computers. Even HP seems to have one on the way. At least one manufacturer of traditional portables is worried by the downward trend in prices. A Sony spokesman said, if the EE PC starts to do well, we are all in trouble. That's just a race to the bottom. And I say good for it. As far as I'm concerned, a lot of the, you know, if you want a higher end, and this is the argument that the Apple people have always had. You get a higher quality product, a higher end product, and you pay more for it. Most people just want to be able to surf the web, get their email.
And that's one of our purposes here, is to explain to people you don't have to buy a Windows PC to do that. You don't need Windows to do that type of stuff. There are alternatives.
Right. And in fact, there used to be a front end. My aunt got this on some machine. I can't remember anymore. It was basically a front end with like three big buttons. Browse, mail.
That was Web TV, wasn't it?
Something like that. Yeah. No, this is an actual computer, but it had basically the same interface. And I forget what the third one was, but you could, you know, you'd go in there and there'd be big buttons, receive mail, send mail, you know, real basic stuff.
And you can download Squeak, which is the OS on the OLPC, right? And you can download that, install it on your computer, and play with it yourself.
It's not Squeak. It's something else. It'll come to me. But yeah, and you can install that. There's also GOS, the green OS.
Squeak eToys. I just found it. Squeak.org.
That's not the built-in front end, but it's a front end you can download, I think. Or is it? Well, it doesn't matter. I just don't remember Squeak as the name, but that's all right. But that's the kind of thing. There's a whole series of front ends you can run, mostly to Linux systems, that are just ludicrously easy. Apple has done a good thing with the dock across the bottom, giving you your basic applications. It really is different that when you close a window, you don't quit the application. That's mildly annoying to me.
More and more programs are doing that, though, because people don't realize that doesn't happen, and you end up with 20 programs running.
Right.
So a lot of programs will close themselves when you do close the last window.
Right, and the problem is right now that's inconsistent. Even Apple's own programs do it inconsistently.
That's right.
Because if you open up the system preferences and close it, it's gone. It's not. You haven't left system preferences open.
Same with disk utility.
Right, exactly. And so I realize we're in the middle of a transition, but it is very inconsistent and very annoying at this point. So a lot of people are finding that something like the green, like the GOS, which is not Google OS, although half the applications in it are from Google.
Right.
And things like the
Linux
OLPC.
Mint is another.
Linux Mint is an exceptional product. Yes, yes it is.
An Ubuntu derivative.
An Ubuntu derivative that adds back some of the stuff that Ubuntu took out because it's
not technically free.
Proprietary, right.
Under GNU.
Right, like the MP3 codecs. And you can add them in yourself. They just couldn't add them in for you. I don't know how Linux Mint gets away with it without being sued, but so far at least they have, which is a nice thing.
I can tell you it works very well.
Yep, you're using it, and it is excellent. But a lot of people are looking at these little things, particularly for like an AEE PC, particularly for like the grandparents.
Linux is not just for geeks anymore.
No, it really isn't. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you in the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And I'm worried about all you.
And at 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Big Voice Show on WHAM.
What, you try to build up, you know, get the courage up once your daughter gets a driving license?
No, you may not take the car tonight. No, I say.
We should get some pictures of you right now with some hair.
See, it won't be a
because
problem.
Because all there's going to be left is just the beard.
I know. Although my beard is so gray, mostly I'm a young-looking guy. Catch me in about 6 months.
Yeah, but no, what I'm saying, the rest of the hair that you have,
is going to be gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That ponytail won't be around.
I'll be one of those guys shaving the fringe that's left, you know?
See, it won't be a problem for borrowing the car, because the boyfriends will have their own car.
No, that's a whole nother experience. That's a whole nother...
With back seats and everything.
That's another chapter that I'm going to enjoy. Because I've already been there, done that.
All right, yeah, all y'all,
me
shut
too.
Up.
Nick, you'll be fine.
Eh, shut up.
Uh-huh.
I've decided I'm keeping the beard, keeping the long hair. I'm getting leathers, chains, and a shotgun. And when they come to the door to
just greet them with the shotgun. That'll
do it. That's
I got no problem going back to jail.
All right, Apple on Thursday.
Oh, you get what is it, a teardrop? You paint a little teardrop?
Yeah, right. Paint the little teardrop. And welcome boyfriend across my knuckles. Apple on Thursday unveiled tools for outside developers to make software programs for its iPhone, a move intended to widen the appeal of the multifunction device. Starting today, we are opening up some native APIs and tools that we use internally to build all our iPhone applications. This means third-party developers can build native iPhone applications using the same tools that we do, said Scott Forstall, Vice President of iPhone Software. The tools will let developers make programs that run directly on the iPhone rather than have to run through the device's web browser, as Apple previously required. PC World had their top iPhone apps, a Kindle ebook reader, to be able to read the books that the Kindle ebook.
I could see Amazon suing over that.
Exactly. A dedicated RSS reader, a VoIP client, a VNC client, voice notes, an editor, a document editor, and an AIM client. One of the problems, of course, with the iPhone.
AIM did show off their, I don't think they've got as far as showing the code, but they did say it's coming.
Yeah, they said it's coming. Yeah. The problem, of course, is an iPhone isn't really multitasking. Talking to a couple of developers, I don't know, I don't have one, but they tell me it's not multitasking. You can only do one thing at a time. So I think that kind of limits you as to what you're going to be doing. You know, you're going to have to turn off your AIM client to answer the phone or, you know.
I'm sorry, a phone should just be a phone.
A phone should be a phone. Well, we'll talk about that when we talk about Wozniak and the next thing. Let's go to the phones. Speaking of phones, our first caller would be Dean from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Dean. What's your question?
Well, guys, I have a question on Windows XP. I have to admit that I'm sort of not in the XP loop. I've been running 98 SE for so many years.
Nice.
Buddy gave me an old computer here, and it's got XP Corporate on it. And I'm going to be building a new system. And I don't know what the difference is between, like, Windows Media Center and the Windows of XP version that I have. And, like, you know, I'm shopping around for the video cards, and I need some more information on that.
Well,
the corporate is like the pro version.
Yeah, it's basically the pro version.
The only real difference is it can connect to an NT domain, which home users don't need anyway.
Right, yeah. You don't need that at home. The Media Center adds a bunch of things, like stuff to view.
It basically
movies
to replace your television.
Yeah.
You can view movies and video and
with,
DVD.
It usually comes with a better video card.
Well, you need a better video card. If he's building his own, then yeah, he really needs it.
Well, it comes with the remote, too.
Right, if you buy it in a bundle with something.
We're seeing a lot of integration now between television, media centers, computers.
Right.
Yep.
The Apple TV box does it. Sony's got a couple.
Your computer now feeds your TV.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let me ask you. I'm considering a 1950 Pro. And it's got two DVI outs and Vivo on it. And I'm kind of assuming that my version of Windows XP would do all the stuff that Media Center would do if I just found a few additional programs. Am I right? Well, pretty much.
The point of Media Center is it's all bundled together. You don't have to find those extra programs.
Yeah, that's typical Microsoft.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, you can do a lot with Myth TV on a Linux box instead of Media Center, too.
There's two things you really need to be very careful of. Well, one thing that in particular is whatever video card you get, make sure it has both XP and Vista drivers.
Correct. Yeah. Can I ask you guys a quick question about the system I want to put
Very quick. We have to move on, but go ahead. One more.
Well, I like Asus, so I'm looking at an M2 R32 and a couple gigs of RAM, the 1950 Pro card, not the Crossfire right away, but, you know, at least having the ability to hook up a couple cards if I want them. I mean, what do you think about the hardware there?
Sounds right.
Sounds good.
Sounds right to me.
It's become so much commoditized.
Commoditized
these days that virtually everything is the same and it almost doesn't matter
anymore. Yeah, get a 20X DVD burner.
instead of maybe a floppy drive, go with a 42-in-1 card reader. Yep. I mean, you'll be all set.
There you go. All right. Thanks. And thanks,
there
is, Dean.
There isn't much price advantage anymore to building it yourself because the prices have come down so much, but it's fun and it's a project.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Then it's the fight to get all the pieces to work together. I still love your story, Dave, about the customer who went to like PC Magazine and bought the editor's choice of every piece of equipment and none of it would work together.
It was great, you know, as individual products, but...
All right, proving we are the international choice for computing radio, we're off to Canada. Ed from Wellington. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes, good morning. I just downloaded, I should say, the Avast program.
Yes.
I also have stuff from, you know, from the sound bites. What am I trying to think of?
Security Tango.
Security Tango, yeah. Do I have to remove any of those?
No, they will all work together.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Are you running an antivirus as part of the Security Tango? We had been recommending Grisoft AVG, but Avast is also a good alternative.
Oh, yeah. I have AVG. And
right.
I have
you don't want to run.
Well, then you
don't
want
to run two antiviruses. Yeah, just one antivirus program is enough.
Yeah, running two can cause you trouble.
Oh, yeah.
You've already experienced that.
Well, I've also seen folks trying to run 3 and 4 anti-spyware programs running in the tray.
Well, sometimes you need that. You know, we recommend SpyBot and AdAware and Super Anti-Spyware, but run them separately. Don't have the auto runs running at the same time.
Right.
I'll tell you one thing I like about it. I run ZoomText 9.0, and when they gave me the pop-up for the prompt about the updates, it was an audio prompt, you know?
Right.
I didn't know whether there was...
Your antivirus definitions have been updated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah, it's a great program. I like it a lot. I've been putting it on a lot of machines. Mm-hmm. But you want to run it instead of rather than in addition to any other antivirus program.
So I could take AVG off then?
Yes, absolutely.
Uninstall that.
Yep.
Great. Thanks very much then.
All right. Have fun up there in Wellington.
I'm trying to get myself out from under the snow.
Good luck. All right. Our next caller is Benny from somewhere in, what's that place? What's the name of that town? Rochester, New York. All right. We'll talk to Benny.
Ooh,
welcome,
long
Benny.
Distance.
Yeah. Welcome, Benny. What's your question?
Yes, good morning. Hi. I have a hard drive issue. My motherboard on my other computer, supposedly they fried, and I'm trying to get information off the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Put our hard drive in another computer in the E drive area.
Yeah.
I can get some of the information up from like my son's homework and stuff, but when I go to pull up documents and pictures under mine, it says access denied, like I'm the administrator.
That's a big issue because you're not the owner of the files on that drive if you're not booted from that drive, logged into that username.
So what you've got to do is, since you're in this other computer, you've got to go into the security settings of that particular drive and change them so that the drive inherits person you're logged on as in this computer will now take over the rights of that hard drive. So you're having it switch over from the machine that was controlling it now to this one. So again, you got to go into the securities and change that.
Right. Essentially take ownership of that machine.
Yep.
Is there some way I can go in and put my password in like I was the administrator?
No, you don't have to change the password. You're just changing who's responsible for that hard drive.
And you can't put in your password for that hard drive because you're not logged in. You're not booted from that hard drive, and you're not logged in to that username. Now, if there's nothing physically wrong with the hard drive, and it was just the other computer that failed, you can tell your new computer now to boot from this now second hard drive, and it's as if you were on the other computer.
No, it won't.
But, well, then you run into issues with Windows activation, with serial numbers, with license
and
keys,
and it
probably won't work.
Yeah.
Unless it happens to be a virtually identical computer.
Well, then
you've got the 30 days for Windows activation.
And it wants to activate it, and usually it won't let you get past that screen. So if you go in and just change the securities settings on that hard drive, that will do it. That's what we do all the time in our shop.
Okay, I'll try that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, appreciate it.
All right.
And that kind of goes to something we'll talk about later. Physical access to the computer bypasses everything.
Right. Our next caller is Tom from Honey I Falls. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Great. Good morning. I just got a real easy, quick question for you guys. We bought a new Vista computer, 2 months ago. Hate it. But it will not recognize my Lexmark X25 printer or Z25 printer.
Have you gone to the Lexmark site?
I did, but I didn't see that if there was anything downloadable.
That's the huge problem with Vista. Virtually nothing works with it.
Well, you're going to have to, you might have to email, go into Lexmar, and go into their contact us, and tell them your situation, and they might literally give you the area where they're putting up Vista drivers, if there are Vista drivers available for that particular
printer.
How
old is the printer?
It's only 2 years old.
That is very old for a printer.
I know, but
six months you might have better luck, but 2 year old probably not.
But the thing of it is, though, is if he was running XP,
it would work fine.
It would work fine.
I know. Now, can I get a disk of XP and wipe out Vista, or will it not let me do that?
Here's the thing.
Would I have to reformat the volume and everything?
Yeah, you have to reformat everything.
So you'd have to back it all up. Then you got to get all the drivers, the XP drivers.
Then you have to worry about the opposite problem. If the computer is so new, there may not be XP drivers for some of the devices.
Exactly. Do they do that on purpose? Do we have to buy a new printer?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, on purpose. I don't think they're really sitting in an office wringing their hands going, wahaha, Tom.
Well,
what they're doing is saying, look, this is an old printer to us. We don't want to sell it anymore. We want you to buy the newer ones. They may not even make the Z25 anymore. I don't honestly know, but they want you to buy newer printers. They want you to move up.
Yep. Wait a minute. I just had a brain fart.
Uh-oh.
What if he was to put this on as a network printer?
Yeah, hang that printer on another computer, share it to the network. That may work.
You set it up as a network printer. Then that might work. So, in other words, if you've got, a Linksys router.
Then
you've got
to find network drivers, which are often harder than local drivers.
If he's got a network card in it.
Well, yeah,
it's a shared printer. Yeah, it's a shared printer.
That might work.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try that.
Yep.
Okay, guys.
Okay, good luck.
See you for years. Thank you.
Sure. All right, our next caller is Doug from Geneva, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
I was reading your column in the paper this morning.
Oh, thank you.
But I have another question. If I want to download from Netflix on my home computer, is there a way that I can wirelessly send it to my big screen? My big screen has a place for a computer in.
Wireless video is tough and expensive.
Yeah.
It's easier to physically plug the device into it.
The short answer is yes, you can.
The problem is it is not going to be inexpensive by any means.
There are devices like the Slingbox and the Apple TV that are designed to connect your computer's video source to a large screen television. The Apple TV works with iTunes, so any video you can put into iTunes, you can wirelessly send to your TV. The Slingbox will have a device on your network and a device connected to your television. So it is possible, but there's...
It's going to be slow, isn't it?
Yeah. How far away is the computer from the television?
It's like 20 feet.
Get a 20-foot.
It's in another room.
Yeah.
Or another room.
Get a 20-foot video cable. It's probably the easiest way.
But it'd have to be very shielded.
Yeah, highly shielded cable.
Very shielded.
Yeah.
And it's going to be expensive.
I found a good 35-foot video cable we use with our projector. I think it was only $50.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's cheaper than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Then I got to...
If it's in another room, then you got to drill a hole or try to find some way to get it through.
I can go down through the basement. That's not an issue for me.
That might be the best way to do it, then.
I'm going to have to do the same thing with my audio, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It may be easier, and a lot of people are doing this, and it goes back to our earlier caller with Media Center. You get a small computer or even a specific Media Center, HP and Sony and a few companies make what is essentially a computer without a monitor on it and a limited just media OS on it, and then that connects into your network. Even the Xbox and the PlayStation do this. And then you can stream content over your network, wired or wireless, from your computer to the television that's connected to this hardware box. Yeah. And I think the HP Media Center starts about $500.
Like we said, not cheap.
Yeah.
But it is doable.
Yeah.
Well, see, where I live, it's very difficult. We don't have a postman, so this overnight stuff doesn't work.
Right.
Because I have to go to the post office.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're open from 8:30 to 5, and that's out of my realm. So I only get there once a week.
Yeah.
What about just burning them to a rewritable?
Yeah, burn it to, it depends on the Netflix model. I don't think they allow you to burn it, and then the DRM prevents you from burning it.
Right.
But that's one of the places where the Apple TV box comes in, where it works on Macs or Windows, and even doesn't need a computer anymore. You plug that into your television, and it downloads, and you can rent or buy movies and TV shows right off the internet.
Right.
Well, that's a good idea. Hey, you should tell the DNC to give you more column space, too, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure they'll listen to me. Our next caller is Leo from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Leo. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. I hope it's just a simple little question. I want to run Word, Excel, access the internet, and maybe be able to run a sales presentation DVD on a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest? How much capacity do I need? Can I go with a used machine?
No, I wouldn't go used.
And you certainly can. I don't know that it'll do you. Well, it'll be slow and it won't last.
And if we back up a step, do you actually want to run Word or do you want a Word processor? Because you could get a cheaper, in essence, lower-end computer with a free OS, called Linux, and a free word processor and presentation program called OpenOffice. And
it'll read and display all the...
The problem is on the older one, if he's wanting to do demonstrations, the dedicated graphics most likely isn't going to be there.
Right. That's the killer right there. If you want to be able to show DVDs to other people, in particular, you need a high-end video card to really get a good presentation on it, and that takes you out of the realm of used and inexpensive.
Already.
Another consideration is reliability. You get a used equipment, and it's like buying a used car. Something is going to fail sometime with a newer...
Sooner
than you want, certainly. It's something new, and it's going to be under warranty. After the first 30, 60 days, you know how reliable it's going to be for you.
Yep.
So when you're doing presentations, that's a consideration.
What are your thoughts on capacity? What would I need?
160 meg hard drive, one gig of memory.
Gig.
Gig of memory.
Oh, 160 gig hard drive.
What did I say?
Meg.
160 gigabytes of hard drive.
When are we going to terabytes routinely? You're going then you start saying gigabyte.
I'm always one behind.
Yeah, 160 gig, at least a gig of RAM, two is better.
Yep. And again, like I said, a lot of the laptops now are having dedicated 256 graphics cards on them. So,
you'll see something called shared video or integrated video. That's cheaper, but not as fast.
Right.
And not as good for dedicated
graphics.
For
your case, I don't think you want that.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the input.
All right. Thank you. Good luck. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak heaped less than lavish praise on Apple's iPhone, MacBook Air, and Apple TV products when visiting Sydney, Australia on Monday. Wozniak, who created the Apple I and Apple II computers in the mid-1970s, but ended his full-time employment with the company in the late 80s, said he was puzzled by the lack of 3G support on the iPhone, then he didn't believe the Mac Air would be a hit. To tell you the truth, I was really disappointed when the iPhone was introduced. Half the phones in the AT&T store at the time were 3G phones, Mr. Wozniak said, during a press conference following his keynote speech at the Broadband and Beyond conference on Monday. I was shocked because Apple is bringing the full internet to mobiles, full web pages with pictures and everything, and it's not 3G, and I knew that would be a speed detriment. Wozniak, who's moved on to new ventures since Apple, but is still an employee and shareholder, said he did not know when a faster 3G iPhone would be released, although it had sort of been known since day one that it would be here eventually. The current iPhone model supports fast edge networks operated by Telstra and regular 2G networks, but both aren't as fast as 3G. At the UK launch of the iPhone, CEO Steve Jobs said Apple left out 3G support because it would have had a detrimental effect on battery life. I never heard that it was a battery issue, said Wozniak. I don't understand why it would be a battery issue. I get as much life on my 3G phones as I get on my non-3G phones. He said he still uses the iPhone and praises its internet capabilities, but he also carries a Motorola Razr for taking calls and browsing the web. When the MacBook Air was launched in January, Apple was criticized by reviewers for trading off too many essential features in favor of a lightweight, streamlined design. The criticism centered on the lack of a DVD drive, missing Ethernet network port, relatively small 80-gigabyte hard drive, and the inability to swap the battery. Wozniak agreed with those criticisms, saying, "I don't think it's going to be a hit." He said he liked to burn a lot of DVDs for friends and watch movies on a plane, so needed the ability to swap batteries mid-flight. I don't feel it's a benefit if you have to carry the Air plus a DVD player plus a couple of extra dongles to connect to Ethernet things and also maybe an extra hard disk to carry your music. But still, there's a pureness about it that I really like. Wozniak said he believed Apple TV, with its on-demand access to movies and TV shows without the need for a computer, was a really good indicator of where the future is, but he criticized the 24-hour time limit given to users who rent shows via the device, and said the quality of YouTube videos played on it was poor. Well, Steve, the quality of YouTube videos everywhere is poor, but I agree that if you only have 24 hours to watch something, let's say you start it, you get called away to some sort of emergency or whatever, you've now paid for something you can't,
and
you'll
you try
never
to
see.
Get, we've already heard this happening on the net. People, you try to get back to it the next night, and you're beyond 24 hours.
Right.
The workaround from that is to don't stop the video, hit pause. You can apparently pause indefinitely and then finish watching it.
Can you rewind? So I can watch it all the way to almost the end credits, pause it.
Yeah.
But then I can't watch something else while that one's paused.
Right, yeah. So if you do have to go away and do something, hit pause, not stop. And apparently that 24-hour clock stops.
Well, that's lovely.
Until that hole is fixed.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it needs to be more than a day. Or at least give you the option for a buck, you can rent it for another day.
Right.
Now,
right,
I could see them doing that because it's more money.
Right. All right, our next caller is Bob from Geneva, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, I got a problem. My mother called me the other day and says that her computer's acting funny. And when I went over there, she had a red desktop with devil heads all over it and 20 pop-ups saying that your computer's infected. Please click here and we'll fix it. And I ran Security Tango, and I got rid of 1,500 infections, but what was left behind when I ran SpyBot was Smith Fraud C, and I found four of them and nine Zolds, Zolbs.
Yeah.
And when I clicked on them to remove them, it removed all of them except three, and now I have no desktop properties. And
afraid, yeah.
What do I go from there?
Unfortunately, you know, we offer the Security Tango, and that'll go to a certain limit. And then there's other tools that I would use that I wouldn't recommend you folks use.
Yeah,
only because of the way it can change things, and you got to know what you're doing.
And a lot of times these really nasty viruses and spyware will embed themselves so deeply into Windows that you cannot remove them without damaging Windows.
And you got to go look. It's a hunting expedition to go looking for the file, because quite often it's hidden, and it creates another file in a random name. And you've got to find the one that's generating it, because you can always find the one that's causing the issue, but then you delete it, and then this program generates another name.
And yeah, they hide in there so deep that you think you're clean, you connect back to the internet, and you're infected again.
But now that I'm missing some of the desktop properties and some folders and things like that, do you think it's too far gone? Or
without actually seeing it, I can't really tell you.
I think your best bet at this point is to bring it into Dave or Steve, let them take a look at it, and make a it's going to cost you a few bucks, but certainly by that point you'll know, and you'll hopefully have saved some of the material on the machine. All right. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites Unplugged on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go grab your footy jammies, a hot cup of hot cocoa. Sit in Indian style on a semicircle around the rocking chair, and if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
I told you I'd be better after I got off my meds.
Uh-oh.
I got a whole week to sit there, you know, just thinking about this after being down with bronchitis. But for all you folks, and for the ones that sit there and say we keep bashing Microsoft, it only is because they deserve it. And what I'm complaining about this week, for you folks that sit there and say, oh, well, I won't even get into that. Anyways, what I'm really bitching about this week is the way Microsoft and a number of their companies are hosing all of us people. Now, you wonder,
how do you really
feel? What am I talking about? Well,
we always ask that at the end of these things.
Well, you go and, say, order a new computer from one of these bigger companies. And you go through the whole list, and they'll do up a listing. And, all right, and here's what the system is going to be. Then you turn around and tell them, oh, I want Windows XP on that. Well, that's going to be another $150. Well, Bill Gates and that company is making double dipping.
Yeah, they're charging you for Vista. They're charging you more to put XP on it.
Exactly. They're charging you once for an operating system, because none of these places can sell you a system without an operating system on it. So they're already charging you for Vista. And then you tell them you want XP, they tell you it's going to be another $150. That is not right. Both Bill Gates and the company is making double profit off of it because they're charging twice for one system.
It used to be, and I don't know if it's still true, but it used to be that if you bought a Linux machine from Dell, you still got a Windows license.
Yeah, Microsoft got sued by all the system builders about that. Right. You pay Microsoft, because we're Microsoft system builders also, you pay Microsoft a flat license to put Windows on all of your computers, whether it has Windows or not. So if you want to put Windows on one of them, you have to license all of them.
But where they're really getting folks is when you get this system and you tell them, say, I want XP on it, they only put the XP sticker on it. You will never get a sticker for Vista.
That you paid for.
That you've already paid for. So that one copy is now being sold to somebody else.
Right.
So literally, they are illegally doing this, and the public is getting hosed. And I don't understand why there's not a big outcry right now to stop this.
Most people don't understand it.
And also, they don't care because they don't. As long as they get their operating system, they're happy because they truly don't expect in the life of that computer to change the OS.
Well, what folks really have
to do,
what you really got to start doing is when you get them to do this quote, and then they turn you, well, it's going to be $150 to get XP. Ask them how much they're going to take off the original system to remove the price that was built into the system for Vista. You can save yourself about $100-$130. By doing this.
Right.
Yeah, most people don't realize what an operating system is, what is the operating system, until they get a machine with Vista, like our previous caller, and can't plug their old printer into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Okay.
I told you I was primed.
We're going to give Uncle Dave his shot now, put him back in the rocking chair, so rinse out your hot cocoa mugs, get out of your footy jammies, get back into the real world. Until next week, Story Hour. With Uncle Dave. Good night, Uncle Dave. We love Uncle Dave, but we prefer him asleep. All right. Yeah, but to go on to a point about that, we were talking about the OLPC, and we should mention, and we'll mention it again in the second hour for the people who didn't tune in because they were late, because they didn't set their clocks ahead, that this Wednesday, March 12th at 7 p.m. at East High School, unless it snows, the Apple Cider Group.
Well, unless the city school district is closed.
Right. Unless city school district is closed. Yeah. So check things. We'll be talking about the one laptop per child. All right. Rob's just fallen asleep on the board and hit six or eight buttons with his forehead. We're done for.
Uncle Dave just won't stop. That's the problem.
You cannot stop him. He's the Energizer Bunny of ranters and ravers. We're going to take a break. We'll be giving you the news, the weather, the sports, all the stuff you really listen to Wham for. On the other side of that, we will be back with the full Monty, or excuse me, the full crew. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who once again ably brings his talent and expertise and abilities to record our show and make it as lovely as it can for the podcast. Does this completely free. Because he's really not that bright, but we appreciate it. Rob Linton, who has woken up somehow. I don't know quite how he managed that on his own.
The bobblehead.
I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Good morning, sleepyheads. You've missed the entire first hour of Sound Bites because you forgot to set your clocks ahead. It is 7 minutes after 12 here in the north coast of America, and it is daylight savings time, so those few of you who actually got up in time, welcome. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Let me start with, yes, you know, every week we do a poll. Last week's poll, would you buy an iPhone if you could keep your current carrier? 271 of you voted, tying for 237. On the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. The overwhelming majority of you, 61%, said no thanks, not a fan. Only 7 of you are perfectly happy with your current iPhone setup. This week's poll comes to us from a question out on the web. Is shrink-wrapped software dead? There's a free-for-all on the web right now, and you don't need a PhD in computing to figure out how to tap into it. Simplified alternatives to many popular applications that you once had to buy are freely available online thanks to new ad-supported programs that run in your browser. So what's the catch? While many of the free word processors, photo editing programs, and games lack the rich features of their retail counterparts, the word processor in Google Docs, for example, has just 11 fonts versus the dozens in Microsoft Word, chances are you won't miss what's missing. After all, most people only use a small fraction of the features available. Software went through a period where it got way too complex. We have a concept that focuses on simplicity, according to Dave Giraud, Vice President and General Manager of Google's free web applications. With new programs popping up every week, some of which are available only through social networking sites like Facebook, it pays to check out the freebies before spending a dime, and you can keep the change. For example, a lot of people are, instead of paying $700 and odd for the full-blown version of Microsoft Office, they will grab something like OpenOffice, or if they only need to do word processing, AbbeyWord, which are both free. AbbeyWord, very small, boots up dang near instantly, and does really everything you need to do on a generalized word processing basis. So the question of the poll is, do you still buy commercial software? The choices are, oh, yes, I can't wait to give more money to Microsoft and others. Games, yes. Apps, no. I've tried free apps, no biggie. Love my free apps, and free apps and free OS. The Linux, baby. So far, excuse me, I completely beg your pardon. I just choked and almost died there right on the phone. So far, we've got 79 votes, and love my free apps is well ahead. So go over to the Soundbites website. That's Soundbites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and vote. When you're done with that, look at the little yellow box underneath. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Rob Linton, a class act from beginning to end. Or maybe you don't need the CL, but the rest of it is right. And you can leave an opinion while you're there. Check out my website. I do a newsletter. I won't be putting out a newsletter today. I'll be honest with you. It's my daughter's birthday. That's way more important. Family always comes first. And you can search all the old Q&As and tips and tricks and rants and raves and everything else I've done. If you're a member, and a membership is only $15 a year, so I can't imagine why you wouldn't join. And then come on back to the Soundbites website and join us in all the fun stuff we do. We've been having fun in the forums and look to see if we've solved the third of Lolly's choices on the searches yet, but we'll figure that out later. And that's what we do there. I suppose we ought to go back to the phones now, if I can take you away from your game for a minute. Dennis from Rochester. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Copy the Tango Security CD.
I'm sorry. Could you start again, please?
Yeah, I just took it off speaker.
Oh, good.
How can they get a copy of the Security Tango CD?
You just got to email me. That's dave@nripc.com.
Okay.
And request one of the CD. Or maybe go to the Soundbites webpage. That's easier because it has the whole form and you can put in all your information.
Okay, just go to the Soundbites.
And it'll be sent right to me.
Okay.
And then if you want one mailed out, we'll do that. Or if you want to stop by the shop and pick it up, that's cool too.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
There you go. That was easy enough. And you can get that
and we, just
on the links page. If you go to the links tab, you'll see it as the fourth choice in the link.
And just to let folks know, we have automated it so that when you put the new CD in, you'll get a whole menu that will allow you to install various programs. You can also do a search on it because I've put in some other stuff in there too. I'm constantly looking for other things that I can add to the CD, you know, just to give folks more tools to do things, you know, fun things that I find and that I've tried out so I know that they work.
Cool. Cool. All right. Our next caller is Lou from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Lou. What's your question?
Hey, I was running my computer yesterday and I have AVG as the virus protector.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the sheriff virus popped up on there and said I was infected with it. And I hit the quarantine button, but then it came back again. So I was wondering, what kind of a virus is this, and how do I get rid of it?
Well, it's very possible.
Could it come from an email or some website that you're going to.
Right. If you were on a website that tried to infect you, and you quarantined it, it would just try to infect you again until you left that website.
I did leave it, and I went into the recycle. I was going to empty my recycle bin, and
right.
It popped up again.
Well, I don't know that it would be in the recycle bin, but is it popped up since then?
No.
Right, because you're off the website. See, while you were on the website, it downloaded some JavaScript.
And it may not even have been on their website. You can go to a different website, and that virus code can still be active.
Right. And so until you popped it off enough times...
Or closed
until
the browser down.
Quarantined it, right, enough times to get rid of all the downloads it had done, because each one comes up individually, right?
Uh-huh.
You quarantine each one, you still have to get through them all before you're finished.
And it's also a good idea when you get something like that to clear out the cache and the temporary internet files.
Oh, okay. Can you do that on Mozilla?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Mozilla, it's actually pretty easy. Under Edit Preferences.
Edit Preferences.
Right. You'll be able to do that pretty easily. There's all kinds of abilities for that sort of thing.
Would it be safer to run the whole security tangle again on that?
I don't know that it's actually necessary, but it certainly can't hurt.
Okay. I'll do that.
Right?
Do the super anti-spyware. Get that program and run that. That finds quite a bit, too. Because a lot of them now are labeled virus/Trojans. We're seeing far fewer viruses as we are Trojans.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys now realized, they can make money off of things selling. If they put a Trojan on there, like, says, your machine is infected. To get rid of that, you've got to go to our website, and for $29.95, we'll give you the software to remove it.
I did go to some, and they had that's exactly what you said.
Yeah, and that's all a big scam. Huh? It is a big scam to get your money, and that's where they're getting rich.
But
so they're
AVG
not making, not writing viruses as much as they are offering this software for stuff that they already put on your machine.
So running the AVG should protect me.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Our next caller is Norman from Hamlin, New York. What's happening, Norman?
Hello, in the middle of pancakes. I wanted to tell you I enjoyed your work on the morning program, Nick Francesco.
Thank you so much.
Sorry to see you go.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling...
I must say, I have to tell people, it was entirely my idea. I loved doing it. I couldn't do 15-hour days anymore. I'm not 20 anymore. I know that's a shocker. Wham was very sorry to see me go. They did everything they could to keep me, but it was not their idea to get rid of me.
Yeah, but you were spreading yourself a little too thin.
Well,
and we were worried about you because,
I know I was tired all the time. Well, okay, but thank you. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for clarifying that, because I thought it had to do with the big shakeup.
Well, a lot of people thought that, and I don't want them to think that Wham in any way, did anything bad or wrong or whatever. It was entirely my idea. They were very gracious about it, but they really wanted me to stay, and I appreciate that they did.
Okay, thanks. The reason I'm calling is I can't run ScanDisk. I haven't been able to since the beginning. It runs and runs and runs.
What operating system are you running?
ME.
Pardon?
Yeah.
ME.
The big problem with...
All right, back away from the microphone.
The big problem with ScanDisk and Defrag and those types of things is they can't run while Windows is running because Windows uses the drive or does something. Trying to ignore him here. But you're breaking that $1,000 mic.
Hey, no, careful. Careful. Whatever you want to do to your hat is your business. Leave the mic alone.
Yeah, so you can't run those types of programs while Windows is running because Windows does things and then the program has to start over again.
Yeah,
so most of the time you have to run it in DOS mode. If you can run it in safe mode, it sometimes works. Or if you can run it in DOS mode, ME still had DOS underneath it.
So you
can boot into DOS and run ScanDisk.
Is it important that I run ScanDisk?
Well, that's another question. It can be.
ME it is, yeah.
And it's called get a new operating system.
If another reason ScanDisk could be taking so long to run is that there's a lot of problems on your drive.
You, of course, know what ME stands for, right?
No.
Many errors.
Oh.
Many errors, no drivers, no support. It's a lot like Vista.
Yes!
The real problem, Lou, is that there is, Norman, is that there is absolutely no support for ME, and you can't get drivers anymore, and you can't.
You're literally leaving that machine wide open for vulnerability.
Yeah.
Is Vista being phased out? Is Windows coming up with something new?
Well, yes. They stopped.
Windows 7. Right. Now, Microsoft has stopped talking about Vista and said, just wait till Windows 7 will fix exactly all those problems again.
Yeah, I think they're, exactly they're taking a different approach, to be honest with you, because it was just too big of a nut for folks to swallow. Yeah,
and more than half of the PC customers who bought new PCs last year bought XP.
Yeah.
Which actually was a win for Microsoft.
Yeah.
They had ended up with two operating systems.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, though, is that you've got to get the superpower machine. And in today's economy, money is not flowing around. People are getting laid off.
You see these three
companies aren't spending the money like they used to.
And you see these $399 PCs advertised on TV that come with Windows Home Basic and 256 megs of RAM, and it'll just run so slow. It's terrible.
Yeah. But yeah, the problem is as time goes on, Norman, you're going to find that there are fewer and fewer programs available, utilities, and certainly no fixes.
Oh yeah, I understand. I've come across that. But so when can I wait for 7? I didn't want Vista.
Well, go get
what
the
are they
XP.
Saying 2009 maybe.
Yeah, the thing is, you don't have to wait for Vista. You can go to Linux now. You can buy a Mac. You can get a machine with XP. You just have to look hard. Go talk to Dave or Steve. They'll get you a machine with XP. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
All right. I goofed up. I'm Dave Enright.
Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton. What are you pointing at?
And at 24 minutes after the hour, the block said 19 seconds to go.
I'm going to have to go ahead and say that PC is probably frozen up in there.
No, it's working fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can tell.
It picked up. I'm the professional of the group. I was watching the machine like I'm supposed to. Wiseacre. All right.
I screwed up. I'll admit it. I did. It happens once.
Well, it's because of the medication.
Once in a blue
moon. Yeah, I'm still on good drugs.
I think
The horse pills that I have to take, though, for that stupid bronchitis, it's like...
They're not oral. All right.
Now you tell me.
For all the good these pills have done me, I could be shoving them up my...
Google
TMI.
Steve just gives you the punchlines and leaves out the good words. You have to figure out the joke yourself. Google has rolled out a new Contacts API, which will allow developers to access your Google Contacts without you needing to grant full access to your account. Prior to the new API, sites that wanted to harvest your contact data, like Facebook, needed your Gmail login information. If handing over your email login info to a third party strikes you as a bad idea, and it should, the Google Contacts API is what you've been waiting for. Using the API, places like Facebook can now rewrite its import script so that you would be forwarded to a Google login page to grant the application access to your contact list. Facebook itself would never actually know your login information. It would simply get a token allowing it to grab your contact data. While this is welcome news for anyone who's ever skipped on importing their address book because they were worried about handing out login credentials, it's not without some drawbacks. One possible reason for concern is how susceptible this is to phishing attacks. For instance, it seems like it wouldn't be hard to craft a malicious site that looks like a Google authentication page but actually grabs your username and password. Of course, that's always a problem and certainly not a result of the API itself. Another thing that makes this perhaps a less than ideal choice has to do with the way Gmail creates contacts. The problem is that your Google contacts aren't always your contacts. They're most likely a bunch of people automatically added by Gmail because you replied to their messages. When it comes to importing contact data into social network sites or your Outlook address book, that potentially means a fair amount of unwanted addresses come in from Gmail. Still, the Contacts API is welcome news for those who are tired of handing out their info. I don't know. There's no doubt there will be third-party apps that'll start to pop up soon. Eventually, there will be options for just about every desktop contact manager around, so you'll be able to import your Google contacts to anywhere else. For my own part, I would very much appreciate it if all of you listening would immediately remove me from your Gmail address books before some virus figures out how to tap into this and I start getting spam. Thank you very much. Our next caller is John on his cell phone. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Terrific. I mistakenly downloaded some spyware onto my company-issued laptop.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I'm getting a message from the toolbar, and it looks like it's a little, like, yellow shield, and it says you have active spyware, and I should download some spyware guards, but is this likely that this is actually a Trojan? Which
yes.
Is-
yes. Yes. Definitely. Not likely.
It is.
Definitely is.
Okay, because I haven't responded. So, A, how do I,
go dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
And you may have a problem there if your company has locked down the computer so that you're not administrator. You can't run a lot of these programs.
Right, but it's unlikely if he was able to download the virus. Yeah.
Well, it could have downloaded itself.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's pretty open.
Yeah, here's my question. I downloaded the newest version of Adware and SpyBot.
Right.
And I can't figure out what the SpyBot. It shows that I have spyware. The old version, it would show you how to quarantine it, then delete it. The newest version, I don't see how to do it. It's telling me I have it, but I haven't been able to delete anything with
there
it.
There should be just the next button that deletes it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, just click next.
And another one that you might want to try, John, is the Super Anti-Spyware.
And you all?
That's another one to run, and it's a freebie, and it works great.
Because I tried Spy Doctor. It tells me I have it. I have spyware, but then I have to pay to get the version.
No, SpyBot and Adware you don't have to pay for, and they both work. And the same is true of Super Anti-Spyware.
Spy Doctor.
Yeah, you can give up on that one.
And be very careful what you download, because Adware is a fake anti-spyware program. Adware is the real anti-spyware program.
If you go to the Security Tango, click on the Let's Dance button, print out that page and follow it step by step, go back on the computer, and all the links are there to the real programs.
You said it's called Super Anti-Spyware?
Yeah, just do a Google search.
Okay, is there a link for that on the Let's
Dance? You're looking for a shortcut here, John. You really need to dance the whole tango.
And superantispyware.com is the link. We've got that on the Security Tango page now, don't we?
Yeah. He's looking for a shortcut. He doesn't want to dance the whole tango. I understand that. He's going to miss about half the stuff he's got to delete. Tango first.
I did run Stinger, and it says there's nothing there.
That is not the Security... John.
That's the first step.
Pay attention. Yeah.
There's
that is not the
steps.
Security Tango. There's 10 steps to the Security Tango.
You got to do them all.
Doing one or another, not in order, that's not dancing. That's just stumbling around. That's why it's called a tango. You got to do all the steps in order. All right. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Morning. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
All right. Basically, my wife got a new iPod. She had 10.3.9 on her G4, which I know it needs 10.4.8. So we bought 0.4, threw it in there. Basically, the updates are absolutely horrendous. Trying to get it going is just a nightmare. I don't know if you guys had any knowledge of knowing which updates were better than others.
Well, two questions. You need every update that it offers. And second, where did you find a copy of 10.4 to buy? Because I haven't sold that in 6 months.
Oh, well, we bought it on eBay. Somebody had it right on there.
Now, most of the stuff on eBay is illegal, so you have to be wary about that. And that could be part of your problem. It's not a legal retail 10.4 disc, and that could be where you're getting some of your problems.
So what's happening is the updater knows it's not legal and therefore is not actually installing some of the updates?
Not technically that it doesn't check to see if it's legal or not, but it could be intended for a different model computer, so it doesn't work right on his model computer.
Gotcha. So they don't sell 10.4 at all?
No, 10.5 came out last fall, and so that's the current version of the system, and that's the only version they sell.
Oh, okay. Well, that answered my question.
Yeah. All right, there you go.
But those updates are big. It can be 200 or 300 megabytes, and if you're on dial-up, it's horrible. So a lot of times what we recommend people do is find a friend with broadband and download them there, or go to a hotspot and try to download them there, which is easier on a laptop, kind of tough on a desktop.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah.
Or if you're in the city and not in my neighborhood, you can get free Wi-Fi. Stinkers. Yeah, down the street. Yeah, right, exactly. All right, before we go on any farther, I started to talk about this earlier, ran out of time, but this Wednesday, March 12th at 7 p.m. East High School, check to see if the city schools are closed before you come out, although it's supposed to start warming up. It's supposed to be in the 40s by the end of the week.
But there's a possible storm on Wednesday.
All right, so check to see whether or not there will actually be a meeting. But if there is a meeting, the Apple Cider Users Group will be doing two things. First, there'll be an election. You don't need to be afraid. You will not be pulled out of the audience. Maybe you will be. It depends on how desperate they are. I've overseen elections that were that desperate.
And how good-looking they are.
Right, exactly. I was president of the Apple Cider User Group for a while, and we often pulled people out of the audience. to do things. But it's pretty unlikely that that will happen. And you should come because after that, we'll be talking about the one laptop per child. I'll be there showing my OLPC.
We should have a couple of them there, so we'll be able to do the mesh and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The very first time I turned it on, I was at RIT. And just as I shut it down, I realized somebody else was on the mesh network part, and I tried to get hold of them, but they had shut down as well. It's very cool, and we'll talk all about it, and we'll show it to you. We won't be able to put it up on the screen, of course, because these things don't have external...
We have a camera connectors. We can point at the
screen. Oh, perfect. That's what you'll have to do. But we'll be there showing that off, and that's at 7 o'clock Wednesday at East High School, so come down and see how cool this machine is and how much fun it is to play with. And that'll be Wednesday at 7 at East High. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vito from Chilai. Vito, ¿cómo está?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a call about VBScript. Back a while ago with Windows 98, currently I'm using Windows XP, it was a problem, and it was a way how in an email, if there was something that you didn't even open in the email, it could redirect your host file to a IP that you really didn't want.
Right.
Is that still a problem?
Yes. It's mostly not VBScript. It's mostly JavaScript. But when you read your email, there are two, well, there are three ways you can do it. Nobody respects Spanish Inquisition.
No!
Stop it. There are three ways you can read your email: as full HTML, as text, and on some email clients, as limited HTML.
Or sometimes they call it rich text.
Right. If you do full HTML, which of course is the default in Outlook and Outlook Express, then it's essentially using Internet Explorer to show you a web page, which is your email. So all the nasty tricks people can play on web pages, they can play on your email, including running a JavaScript automatically in the background that does all kinds of nasty nonsense to your machine. So we suggest that people set their Outlook Express to be text only, or better, not use Outlook Express, use something like Thunderbird and set it to text only.
Yeah, the danger there is because most people like having fonts and colors and pictures and styles, and they don't know they're using HTML email and don't know that the problems are there.
Right.
We're using plain Jane Eudora, really old version of it.
Yeah, even so, you can set that to be the same, either full, I forget what they call it, full text, rich text, or plain text. If you don't set it to plain text, you're using essentially HTML.
Should I then eliminate the VBScript, or should I eliminate JavaScript? I mean, what do you recommend?
My recommendation is I personally turn off everything and just read text as text. If you want to send me a pretty picture, I don't have to see it. I don't want to see it. I don't need to see it.
You've probably already seen it.
I've probably already seen it, and it comes in as an attachment, so if I really want to see it, I can. But I don't need stuff embedded in my email. Give me the information and let me move on. So I always turn that stuff off and read stuff only as plain text.
I don't have to go through the removal of a VBScript file within my computer. I just do what you suggest.
Well, that could stop other things from working that you may want to run.
Right. You don't want to remove VBScript from your system unless you're talking about a specific VBScript which was downloaded through your email. That I would remove.
Yeah, this is becoming the new annoyance, that along with forwarding forwards of forwards with forwards and not removing all of the previous email addresses.
Mm. Okay, well, then I'll leave that VBScript in there, and I'll do what you suggested. Thank you.
Right. Now, again, is that a VBScript that downloaded through an email?
No, actually, I think it came in because when I was using McAfee, it needed it to update.
Okay, that's entirely different. I didn't know it did that, but that's entirely different. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Yes, and that's the big problem is that most of these VBScripts and JavaScripts and whatnots are good, but the bad guys have taken that same technology and done bad things with them, and there's no way to tell.
Just right. Like everything else on the web, you know.
All right, our next caller is Ed from Henrietta. Welcome, Ed. What's your question? Ed?
Question is, what do you think of the big box store computers with all their peripherals? In the past, you seem to have a kind of a bad taste in your mouth toward those, and I'm just curious.
For me, and I'll speak as the one person who's not actually running a computer store here. Well, Chris doesn't either, actually. for me, it depends entirely on the quality of the help.
Yeah, if you can fix your own computer and you know how to run your own computer, there's nothing wrong with the big box stores, but you can't ask them any questions. That's where places like Dave and I, you talk to us, you develop a relationship with us, and we can answer your questions.
And the other big issue, though, is the service.
Yeah, most of the big box stores don't do service.
Yeah, they ship it out.
Right.
So you're going to be without your PC for, maybe a couple of weeks.
So in terms of people, it is not unheard of, but it is rare that you get people of the same quality and caliber as Dave and Steve in those stores. And in terms of fixing your machine, they have to ship it. So you're waiting that much longer and probably paying that much more for any sort of service.
Well, they're always pushing this, I don't know what to call it, Fire Dog or Geek Squad or something like that for quite a bit of money.
Well, and that's the big thing. They want you to spend the extra money. They'll send someone to your house who may not be able to fix it there and have to haul it away anyway. We run into this with Apple, that Apple's extended warranty, the AppleCare Protection Plan, covers on-site service for some model Macs, but then you go out to the customer's site, diagnose the problem, go back to your store, order the part. The part comes in, go back to the customer site, try to replace the part, and it's just wasted time and money, trying to do that. It's easier for you to bring it to us, and then we can replace it faster.
Right.
Why don't you give me your name and address again? I listen to you guys, but I just kind of goes in one ear, not the other.
That's usually true when you're talking to either Dave or Steve.
I'm Dave Enright with Enright PC, 70 Empire Boulevard.
And Steve Ray at Mac Ave, 7716 Victor Menden Road.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites. Well, a security researcher has released an easy-to-use tool that accesses locked Windows computers in seconds without entering a password. The tool was released on Tuesday by Adam Bolio, works by connecting a Linux machine to the FireWire port of the target PC. Did we talk about this last week?
I've
been talking about this all week with other people, and I couldn't remember.
No, I don't think so.
Because it only came out on Tuesday. It connects the Linux machine to a FireWire port on the target PC and modifies the password protection that's stored in local memory. The attack exploits a well-known weakness in FireWire that makes it easy for connected devices to read and write to the memory of the host machine. Similar hacks work on machines running OS X and Linux. Of course, the attack depends on having physical access to the targeted machine, and anyone who has physical control of the PC owns it. Then again, password protections have been a useful way to briefly secure a machine while a user runs to the bathroom. Until now. As Boilo's tool makes clear, such protections can be bypassed in a matter of seconds. The other potential shortcoming to the attack is that it requires the targeted machine to have an IEEE 1394 port, better known as FireWire. This might present a problem for those trying to attack an older machine, but as FireWire ports have grown in popularity, the requirement is becoming less and less of an issue. It's the second attack in as many weeks to siphon information stored in a computer's random access memory. Previously, researchers documented a novel way to access files that presumably were locked using disk encryption by accessing a ghost image of the key stored in a computer's memory chips. Bolio first demonstrated the Windows shortcoming at a 2006 conference, but until now, he has stopped short of publicly releasing the tool because Microsoft was a little cagey about exactly whether FireWire memory access was a real security issue or not, and we didn't want to cause any real trouble, he said. Now that Bolio has refocused attention on the attack, Microsoft is sure to point out that it's made possible by features built into the IEEE 1394 specification. That's true, but we're not sure that's enough to get Microsoft off the hook for failing to fix a weakness that's been in the public domain for at least 2 years. After all, how hard could it be to disable FireWire connections while a PC is locked?
Well, then that would force your hard drive. You might have a hard drive mounted, and that would crash that and unmount it unnaturally.
It doesn't have to be disabled. It just has to be locked. Prevent it from, buffer everything, whatever you're doing.
But that goes back to physical access. You can type in a password and gain access to a computer.
Right.
And that's a security flaw.
Or I can just turn it off.
Pull a hard drive out.
Yep. So, this is not as big a deal as you might think, but it's just one more way to break into somebody's computer. Honestly, if you're leaving your machine unattended in front of somebody else, you deserve what you get.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit unclear on this, Nick. Is the problem with the 1394 interface, or is the problem with the operating system?
The problem is that the operating system will allow pretty much any 1394 device access to all of memory automatically.
So if I hook up Microsoft system.
Right. So basically what this guy did was took a Linux box, hooked it up via 1394 to both a PC and a Mac. Said he was, you know, the software said, I'm an iPod.
Okay.
And bang, he was in and he was open to all the memory. He could suck out all the memory of the machine into his machine and within a 1394, that's pretty fast. And right. then at his leisure later, figure out what the passwords are because they're all stored in memory while you're, you know, the thing is locked and figure out the whole machine. Basically, he owned it.
And he did it in both the Mac and the Windows machine.
Yes.
Okay, so the problems with the interface.
Well, that's what this is saying. No, Microsoft, I'm sure, will say it's not our problem. It's an interface problem. No, it's still the operating system's problem for not dealing correctly with the interface.
Both operating systems are dealing
all
with
three,
it.
All three, actually.
Inappropriately.
Right.
And then the third being Linux, I presume?
At least, yes. At least for 2 years, everybody's known this FireWire problem.
Well, not everybody.
And nobody's fixed it. Well, I mean, the three companies.
Okay.
Right? The three operating system vendors. And, okay. And at least one of them in 3 years should have fixed this.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah. So, all right.
An easier way to do this is, and quicker is you take 15 seconds and turn on file sharing. And then you go back to your office, your home, and right. copy all the files at leisure.
Right.
So there's a security flaw.
There's your security flaw. All right. Our next caller is Ron in Arkport. Where's Arkport, Ron?
Hi, guys. Thank
south of Dansville. Call. Or north of Dansville, right? Yeah, I go through Arkport on the way to Dansville.
There you go. A little west of Dansville.
Okay.
Okay. Question today is, tomorrow, the day before yesterday, sad wife, non-technical, says, oops, my computer doesn't work. Went over and booted it up, and it says, oh, OS not found, of course. It's an older compact Presario. It came with ME, stay on your chair. I knew that when I bought it, but I only bought it because I got the XP upgrade automatically with it.
Okay.
Which they sent to me, and I immediately dumped ME and updated it to the XP.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I put a second hard drive in it a couple of years ago, so monthly or so, I would take everything that's on the hard drive and move it over into a second drive, which I partitioned. The compact wouldn't take anything over 100 gigs, so I put an 80 in and I partitioned it.
Right.
40 and 40.
So I moved. All right, wait, Ron. Hang yeah. on. We got to take a commercial break, but stay on the line. We'll finish up with your question when you get back. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. We've got Ron on the line with his question. He's been having OS not found issues.
And what I'm thinking, Ron, is that we were kind of talking it over and battering it around here. It could be either the hard drive or memory, or it could be that you have to reinstall the OS over the OS.
That would be the first thing that I would start with.
But
if you have a second drive with a backup on it, then you can either make that your primary drive and run from it, or copy that all back to your main drive.
The problem is that I've already tried to do that, and I took my backup drive and I switched it over. I don't have an operating system on the backup.
Yeah, you've right. got to reinstall the OS on the OS or the hard drive to get that back.
The only thing I'm trying to do is save the files that she has on there. That I've always moved my stuff over, and I'm operating on another computer. But I wanted to try to save the files she has on there.
Then your best bet is to take that drive to Dave or Steve, have them pull the files off for you because they can do that on a second machine without harming the drive any further. If it's doable at all, either of them can do it.
Yeah, we can burn it to DVD for you.
Right. Okay. I kind of said, okay, I've had enough of this, so the recovery won't work. It says call compact.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it's a bad drive, you can replace the drive, but it's hard to say on a machine that old.
So bring it to Dave or Steve, and we'll go to our next call, which is Merle on a cell phone. Welcome, Merle. What's your question?
Yeah, I got a question. I've got a laptop, HP DV8000, and last time I used it, it seemed like the processor was locking up on me. I think the fan on the processor, one of the fans inside the case, is dying on me. Basically because it got really hot on the left-hand side over
right.
by a couple of the connectors, and I could hear one of the fans kind of flagging.
Right, you need to replace that fan.
Which, on a laptop, may not be easy or cheap.
Unless we can pull it and clean it out and grease or oil the bearings.
Yeah, because laptops, every laptop from every manufacturer is almost different. A custom proprietary design.
And it's expensive because we've got to literally take the whole unit apart.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. If I brought it to you guys, would it be obviously easier than me to take apart? I'm a technician at a factory, but, I mean, I don't really work on laptops, only desktops.
Yeah, the big problem is finding take-apart manuals.
I've heard of specialty tools that take apart laptops. Am I looking at having to get one of those?
No, no. Well, it's basically Phillips head screws. But the
we
key
see a lot
thing
of T6s, which are hard to find.
Is taking all the screws out and remembering where they go once you take them out.
And figuring out which ones have to come out for which piece.
Yeah, you got to lay it out on a piece of paper, and usually we divide it up into grids. And when you take the screw out, you write where you got these screws from.
Okay, all right.
That's all it is a big thing like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 127 different sized screws.
Yeah.
On many laptops.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Chuck from Albany, New York. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I've got a user that's running off an Exchange. They're using Outlook 2003. When they go to open up any attachment, they cannot find specified file.
Well, is it a brand new document they've gotten or is it an old one?
It doesn't matter.
All right. It's possible that the latest update from Microsoft to their what operating system?
XP Pro.
It's very possible that the latest update closed down the firewall and won't let you download attachments from Exchange. You would need to open that back up.
It could also be a setting on the Exchange server not passing attachments.
Right. Or a setting in Exchange.
Was it doing it before?
It's only on this one PC.
Was it doing it all right before?
No, we were having issues with it. I uninstalled Outlook completely, removed the folders, reinstalled it, did all the updates, still doesn't.
We've got a thing on our, I'm looking it up on our link list somewhere, how to re-enable attachments in Outlook, because it's a settings file. It's a security violation that a lot of viruses pass as attachments, so you can tell your Outlook to not let attachments
right,
through.
And clearly somehow or other that system has had that set.
Yep, okay.
So he'll look that up, and well, you can find it in our link list.
Okay.
Under stuff, what is it called?
List of previously mentioned sites. Yeah,
there you go. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who ably comes in every week, totally unsolicited, and does our recording for the podcast and does a phenomenal job. He spends his own time editing it and cleaning it up and doing all those sound wizard things, and I want to thank him for that. Rob Linton, who stayed awake for much of the show this week, except for that one time when he fell asleep with his forehead on the keyboard and suddenly we had several things going at once. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Happy birthday, Amelia Rose. Happy daylight savings time. At 59 minutes after the hour, Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
Happy birthday, Deb.